Can I just say how luxurious it is to be back on Riverside
FM? So nice. Thank you, Riverside.
We were very critical of Riverside with this podcast, but it feels like they put in the work. Good job, PMs. It's a lot better than it was.
It's smart us. You know what they did? They did a replatforming is what they did. They went into some sort of service-oriented architecture. They replatformed, and here they are. Yeah, they went away for 3 years. It's great.
Yeah. We just didn't like it because it would freeze, right? It's tricky on your... It's tricky. It's pretty heavy on bandwidth, and our videos get pixelated, and it gets a bit funky.
Yeah,
but the audio quality here is just so much better, isn't it?
We really are off to a rocking start for this episode. I think this is what our audience comes for. This deep how podcasting works.
I don't know how we come full circle. StreamYard sucks. Sorry, StreamYard. The audio is just appalling on it. We've been trying... All season two has been on StreamYard, and it's just not been very good.
Season two, what a dud.
Is that what we're saying? Season two was a dud because StreamYard...
We're blaming our tools. That's what we're doing. What do you think of Framer.io? I think that's the real question.
Yeah. I still use it.
Yeah.
I did. I used it recently. Yeah, we still pay $35 a month for it.
Ooh, steep.
Yeah,
and you're not delivering features. They're off there just replatforming. Everyone's replatforming. Hey? That's what you do now, don't you?
Yeah.
You do work. You replatform.
It's the new thing, isn't it?
So that's important not to get behind.
I've got a fireplace with pumpkins in the background. What have you done for the upcoming Halloween?
I've fed my squirrels. So I went to Trader Joe's in a panic, 9 p.m. on the 2nd of October going, it's begun. And we're late. We're already late. My child is already feeling like left out.
Why?
Trader Joe's. I bought whatever pumpkins I could fit into I bought 9 large pumpkins, put them on the doorstep, knowing full well
the they
were going to be perfect fodder for the animals in my yard. And sure enough, the squirrels are now pumpkin loaded.
Already?
Yeah.
Is there a strategy there to get them all fit, like fill up the squirrels, get them sick of pumpkin before Halloween? Is there like, if you put out 8 pumpkins a day now, then when it gets to Halloween,
That was my strategy for how to avoid them eating the plum trees. I would sacrifice my pear tree.
Sacrificial
pear tree. But now I've got the fig tree going. I was hoping that the pumpkins would become the sacrificial. Look, it's a vicious cycle. I'm not sure. I think I'm emboldening, I'm enabling these squirrels. I don't think I'm really.
Pets. Squirrels are cute.
They're adorable. They're rats with PR and a fluffy tail, aren't they?
They're not, though, are they?
They're rats. They are absolutely rats. They're the same physiology as the rat. They're a rodent just with a fluffy tail. It's great PR. Rats with PR.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, as a southern hemispherite, is that a thing?
Yeah.
I still find the squirrels novelty-based, and they do feel like a family living above our house, but let's be very clear, you know.
Yeah, we got squirrels in that garden. We got raccoons too. I was having a weird...
Oh, Jesus.
I got up at 5:30 in the morning to get in the cold plunge last week because I had a super early start.
You had to get it in. I had a timer. I had a bet with Cara how long it would take for the cold plunge to enter the conversation. There it
Mental.
Is.
Okay, no. Did you really? Mental. No, but the 4 raccoons appeared in our garden and they were very... concerned for my mental health to see me sitting in this 50-degree water, like they super confused, like what the hell was wrong with me, like
this
and raccoons love water, like they're just like, what's wrong with that fella, like and I felt the same. I mean I couldn't but laugh. It was dark. It was 5:30 in the morning. I was freezing and I'm sitting here looking at this family of 4 raccoons just sitting there staring at me. It's like, yeah.
Oh, this is mad. I love this time of year. As my neighbor explained it, it feels more real in the Bay Area this time of year. It's just, it gets cozier. Things are getting darker in the morning, darker in the evening. It's just
I do kind of like stuff. But you get this heat burst. It was 89 degrees here today, like we talked about. This October, it rains for like 3 days. There's like end of September, it's like winter. And then it's like, nah, I'm only messing with you.
Jokes.
It's super hard again, hot for like another 5 or 6 weeks. Fire season. And then it's cold.
This is class, isn't it?
Is it?
Would we call it Indigenous American summer? I don't know. It used to be called Indian summer, but I don't even know if that's the right Indian we're referring to. The point is,
I want
great
to distance
summer.
Myself from it's that. A, yeah. yeah.
The words of these podcasts do not represent your estate. The point is, it's how good is the Indian? It's such a cheat. It's such like a, no one, don't tell anyone. This is great.
Yeah.
It's October and it's 90 degrees, whatever, 32 degrees Celsius.
This was the hook for, it's when we first came here, you and me, was we came for the fall of 2014 or 13, was it, or 14?
14.
Whatever.
Oh,
it was 14.
No, we're aging. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like, this place exists where it's just like this all year round. We'll just stay here. Yeah.
And to top it off, so you've got October, end of the month, peaks with a bit of Halloween action, which, by the way, favorite holiday, no question. 1st of October, everything's already Halloween. It's happening. We're already running late.
Yeah.
And then they sneak in Fleet Week. They sneak in the Blue Angels.
Yeah.
F-18 acrobatics on top of SF, buzzing SF like it's Beirut 1982 for 3 days straight.
It's a real show of force, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's indoctrination at its best, but dear God, am I in for it?
I'm in for it too, because you know, our building, the Autodesk building, is down on one Market Street there. So it's right across from the ferry building. So if you don't know San Francisco, you've probably seen, if you've seen pictures of the Golden Gate Bridge, the other iconic building you've probably seen is the ferry building, which is the clock tower down by the waterfront.
That's and the one normally in the background of people shooting up and like human fecal matter on Market Street. Not. Normally the ferry building is just like it's the bokeh in the background. I'm just saying Market Street is no, yeah.
When have you been up to the city, actually? You don't know what you're talking about.
I was there 3 weeks ago to see a show at the theater, the best theater in town.
It's really bad. So the theater district is terrible right now, but that is really far away from where I'm talking about.
No, I'm just saying Market Street in general. I'm with you. The ferry building's great. I'm just Market Street. It was.
I don't know about this.
I wasn't. It's like,
no, but I just so. No, no. I just read a what's happened. Okay, so I've read a lot about the rejuvenation of here's where I'm at.
Yeah, here we go.
This is what triggered me.
Yeah,
it sounds triggered. Mayor London Breed of San Francisco. I was going to talk about Fleet Week. I was going to talk about the show.
You can still
do
that. You can still do that. I just want to know what's flipped. You flip flopped. You're out of the doom. What's it called? Doom spiral.
I want to be optimistic about it. Here's where I am. We've talked about this lot in the past. Mayor London Breed, our voted in representative, is rejuvenating San Francisco. This is her goal. There is 32% occupancy or office buildings with no tenants in them right now. So pre-pandemic was about 4%, 5%. Post-pandemic, it's continued to rise to about 32%.
Largest in the US. By far and away, the biggest vacancy rates in the US for commercial real estate.
Yeah. By far. But you know, San Francisco is the city of rejuvenation. Like this is
boom to bust.
And you know, you and I didn't know about this history, and we read that book when we came here, and it's like this is the history. It reinvents itself. It's always the phoenix from the flames. So I'm looking for the phoenix. There's the
phoenix. Is it Legoland in the Westfield? Is it Legoland in the Westfield? Is that yours?
I read about all the major brands that have left the city entirely, like Gap, like Saks of Fifth, like Neiman Marcus, Nordstrom. like you name them, they're gone.
Hollowed out. Like, four hotel chains. Gap, which by the way is an SF brand, like Levi's leaving SF. It's craziness.
Right. So it's like, oh, that's not great.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are we going to do about it? It's going to be brilliant. They're doing pop-up art shows and like crafts fairs in the city. And I was like, hang on a minute.
I was about to go all in with you. That's good.
I was like, wait a minute. What are we doing again? Yeah, no, like Etsy, but in commercial buildings. I'm like,
think Pinterest meets 3D with.
I was like, wait. There's a scale problem here. This is are you sure this is going to save the city?
High volume, low margin. That's what they all say. That's what rejuvenates commercial.
Let's get all the crafters in.
Yeah.
I did, but that sent me off. So then I was like, this is the rabbit hole I went down, which was like, I read all, there are legitimate plans in place. So there is a reimagination of San Francisco that's happening right now.
That's the plan, right? There's a reimagination plan, 2020.
The reimagination plan. The reimagination plan is about having a city that is not just a financial district that empties out at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, we've lived in London. Like, London's a class place, but like, it's suburbia. Suburbia is class, but like, downtown London, central London is empty at 5:30 p.m. It gets,
London
City
is a square mile, but everything else is
square mile.
Yeah.
But San Francisco was one of those cities too that when I'd be leaving one market, these iconic buildings, beautiful place to work, very clean part of the city, to be fair.
You're running, aren't you? Just announce your presidency and be done. Announce your candidacy for District 2 SF and be done with it, mate.
But they do empty out and people go out to the burbs. Yeah. And I would go down to Noe Valley, which was like a few miles away, lovely place to live, but like there was nothing going on where I worked in the evenings. And they want to redistribute the kind of, you know, more affordable housing is a key theme, but also having housing in downtown and like rejuvenation and rebirth of the city.
It's all mixed use stuff. 100%. As an Australian,
I'm all in for that. That sounds good.
as an Australian with Melbourne and Sydney that did it literally, you know, 15, 20 years ago, where you turn like CBDs into full multi-moose and bring people back. It's brilliant. It really works. It's a Europeification of what is American style CBDs, or, you know, the central downtown business districts. And SF will probably do it before everyone else does, and it'll follow the trend because it has the opportunity.
I hope so. Because
opportunity is there. They're rock bottom. It's empty. It's cheap. This is how it works. This is how the last startup boom happened in SF, because commercial real estate was dead. It was gone. So all the startups just got free for office space. I'm all for it. I don't know what shape it'll take. I don't know if
can
it'll
I
be
tell, you just can I tell you what the se- you just still. You just mentioned it, but can I tell you what the second thing was that would rejuvenate? So number one, get all the Etsy people in.
Yeah.
And then number two, it was kind of a throwaway, and it might help that all the AI startups are here. That was like the second thing. I was like, because, and it gave a map. I actually screenshot it.
The AI startup map is the greatest thing ever.
If you look at San Francisco, there's Databricks, Sift, Lucidworks, Waymo, Hive AI, Keep Truckin', Hayden AI, Hover Inc., Cruise Automation, Osaro, Scale AI, Tome AI, Adept AI, and Open AI, aka ChatGPT, all in downtown San Francisco now in these cheaper buildings. And it's like, if the crafts doesn't work out, the earrings and sandal sales, we might have something here with these tech startups,
just
you know?
Just a backup. Just something in the background.
It really was like that. And I was like, Well,
you've got a plan.
We might be all right.
I like the stuff where they were doing, you know, they're bringing the indoor Lego, first ever indoor Legoland into that Westfield where Nordstrom was.
Yeah.
They're doing these like multi-use educational university things. They're bringing it in. There's just some really, like, it's a bit of a long-term thing to turn it into a night hotspot with living in residential. Like, it's hard to convert commercial into residential. That's really, really hard to do.
And it's like a network effect too. Like, it's like building a platform. Like, what do you build first? Do you build the playgrounds and the nightclubs first, or the creches first, or do you build the houses in the? It has to come together.
It's some long-term stuff. Yeah, but just the cheapness makes things possible. It's Berlin. You know, it'll do wonders. Have total faith. I don't know what shape it'll take, but it'll lead, and then everyone else will follow. Like, no question.
Hope so.
I love this. Anyway, Fleet Week, Blue Angels, planes.
Fleet Week.
They go over the planes.
Well, you probably have this in Australia too, this like show of power I was thinking about. Like,
no.
We don't have this in Ireland, but it was really... So going back to why we were talking about downtown, my building looks over the ferry building, and that's where all the fleets go past. Like, all the ships go past there, the planes fly past there. I remember when was it the 787? What was the new aircraft?
Yeah, the airliner. Yeah, the Dreamliner.
The huge one, the Dreamliner came out. No one had seen it properly yet. That came at Fleet Week, and I remember it coming past our building and pitching to the side so you could see how big it was, and it flew down next to us, you know? Like, cool stuff like that happening. But it is an interesting show of power that I'm just not used to, where it's like, oh my God, these are all military ships and planes and stuff.
It's unique to just America, North Korea, and Russia, and a couple of other military states. Otherwise, it's not unique. It's just a bit much. Like, this is very treacherous ground, but like, just have a look at the military spending. There's something to it here. Aside from all of that, there's the 16-year-old in me who used to play the Blue Angels F/A-18 simulator and like fly in V formation. It's pretty spectacular.
It's so cool.
In like 2015-16, when I was trying to look for cars, remember that when I sent you the video and I was going on the on-ramp of a freeway and I was like, put my foot down on a car that I was test driving as three of them flew straight over me and I thought I was in some sort of Top Gun preview. Like, it was just ridiculous. I'm like, I'll buy the car now. Whatever it is. The angels just blessed it. It's fun. Anyway, so...
Do the Aussies have those? There's the red arrows in the UK. Have you guys got the yellow down unders or something? I don't know.
The bopping Roo Hornets. No, look, I'm sure there's some flyovers occasionally, you know, not at every football game. They don't have the stealth bomber going over the football games. Yeah, there's flyovers occasionally, maybe for, you know, Australia Day or something over the harbour. But even then, it's demure and they're actually like up on the borders of the Northern Territory doing work as opposed to down. Yeah.
Those jets, when you do hear them come through, and I don't just mean on Fleet Week, but they do come through the city here sometimes, and it is partly to remind you that we have them. But like the rolling thunder, the sound of those planes, and you can't even see them. They're up high, they're flying insanely fast. I mean, like, you're used to seeing planes jet across the sky, you're used to seeing helicopters, but you hear this noise thing, you look up, it's already gone because the speed of sound, yeah. You know, and you look and it's like a dot, and it's like traveling so fast, like faster than you'd imagine.
We've had a couple of these F-35, you know, they're new hockey $6 billion ones. The one that got lost over in the East Coast and they just ejected and he's gone. Twitter, please help me.
We know within 100 miles.
Roughly. Jet spotting Twitter. Can you just help me find my F-35? Anyway, we had a couple of those going down around here and it's peculiar, right? You kind of, they're a very sharp plane. The other dissonance I have is when you go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
So Hawaii being kind of an outpost in the Pacific, you know, it has some historic significance, particularly Oahu, and there's solid military presence there, and they've got the latest jets, those Navy, whichever the 23s or the 35s, whichever the ones the Navy is, I think 23s, at the Raptors, and that you're like on the beach, you're sipping your pina colada, it's relaxing, I'm whirled away, this is blood.
Yeah.
Like constant reminder. There's a real, there's a dissonance, you know.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
Did you hear on the plane goes down this? So for folks, there was a US plane went down. They were testing it, and he ejected. And the plane has this auto fly thing where it'll keep steady and stable, so it doesn't hit something and then go down ultimately. So they didn't know where it went down, but it was this. How expensive was that plane?
$2 billion.
$2 billion. $2 billion plane crash. They released the 911 call from the fella. So this pilot fell out of this plane, he ejected, he parachutes down into some fella's back garden, and the fella comes and he comes in, and they release the 911 call, and they go, hello 911, what's your emergency? And he's like, a pilot fell out of a plane and he's in my backyard. And she's like, she's not getting it at all. She's like, she's saying she really doesn't get it. And she's like, is he? And you can hear the pilot talking in the background. He's like, please send 911. I need, please let people know my plane is missing. I need to inform. And she's like, not getting it. You can, like, you picture her. She's got like a nail file. Like, it's that kind of conversation. She must get them all day long, you know? She's like, yeah. And does he seem injured in any way? Does he?
How many eyes does he have?
I'm not injured. I'm in the military. My plane has gone down. I need to, and any other signs of and what did you say happened? He fell out, he fell in your garden. It's like it was just like the like there's 10 minutes of frustrating, like he's saying it over and over before she's like, I'll send someone out, because I don't know, it's just like she must get three of those calls a day that someone fell out of the sky, you know. It sounded like that.
Quick real-time fact check, not $2 billion. That was for the squadron. It's $150 million per unit.
Bargain.
Just, it's actually worth, is a bargain. Worth letting it go.
Given a Lucid Air is like $500 million. A Lucid Air car is costing $500 million per vehicle right now.
$500,000 per vehicle, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. $500,000.
couple of
there's an order. There's a few extra zeros. $500,000.
I love that you think of Lucid. I love the idea that a Lucid... That's a sick car.
It is a good car. Jason never sent us any swag, so I'm not buying it. He said he would send us some marketing swag, or at least me, but it never arrived.
All lies. Mate, it's been a while since we touched base. A lot's happened. Have you been tracking? What have you been tracking? What's going on?
What have I been tracking? It's been cold. So I think the last time we talked, I was still in sabbatical. I don't know. I've been back to work for a couple of weeks now. So came back to work, had a couple of off-sites, managed to get a kid into the emergency room twice, a week apart. And then I got like this COVID that's not testing positive as COVID, but basically feels exactly like COVID. So I'm on like day four of that now. Wait.
You are COVID or you're not COVID, or you're like COVID. Don't tell COVID.
I had the offsite, and a bunch of people came who'd had COVID 2 weeks before and they were fine. And then I was feeling terrible. I've been testing every day. I'm still testing negative.
Still negative. Okay.
4 days later, I've done four negative tests. So it's not COVID, but it's like flu or man cold or something terrible like that.
Yeah, the worst. Worse than COVID.
The worst, yeah. So, yeah, so that's going on. It's meant I've not worked out since Monday. Like I ran, to be fair. So I woke up Sunday morning, I had a bit of a cough and I was like, I'll go for a run anyway. I know I shouldn't work out. Ran 10K because you had signed me up for this 10K. And I was like, okay. I went out. I was feeling good. I was like, okay, I'll just do 10K. Yes. Did the 10K. Came back. Felt like death after it. Like felt like that's when it really kicked in. Monday, lifted a bit in the morning. Did my weight session. Did a few, You know, yeah, I told you I can do some pull-ups and chin-ups now. That's my new thing. I've never been able to do those before. So I did a few pull-ups and chin-ups with Bryce. My trainer came over. And then after that, cold sweats, felt terrible. Felt terrible after like 10 o'clock Monday.
Yeah, okay.
So I've just been feeling, and it got gradually worse. Monday night was like a night of, on my Whoop, I usually, so did I tell you this? My Whoop does a sleep tracker. And I was the 200 of, I'm in the 40 to 50 age group, people, I'm whatever.
Shocking.
My sleep was in the top 259. I was number 259 for best sleep the week before my kids got sick and all that stuff. But my recovery this week is average 17. Instead of 100%, I've been getting 17% recovery despite being in bed for like 9 hours. Yeah, okay. So just one of those weeks where I'm sweaty, horrible, not sleeping, feel like crap. Kids are sick. Today was the first day both kids were back at school. So just one of those weeks.
Just disastrous. The double
sounds
whammy.
Like you're sick too, though.
It's going through us. It's the double whammy. I'm empathizing, and I have a sense it's COVID. We're testing is also not coming up, but like one of the classes at preschool, everyone but one kid is out with COVID. Like, the chances of it not being
every day.
Everywhere else. Literally, when yesterday, just a teacher holding this one kid, I'm like, that's your class right now. All right, good luck. So, it's the double whammy of the kids are whining and painful and they need to still, you know, live. Yeah. And you're their death. All you want to do is crawl up into a ball and not... Anyway, you push through that. The man flu is much worse than anything else, though. That's the real kicker.
Well, Kelly still has pneumonia, right? So, like, I'm getting nothing from her, you know? She's like, I've got pneumonia. I'm like, okay. Solar. But, like, this is the worst feeling I've ever felt, you know?
No,
I was pretty good about it this time. But, yeah. Okay. It's just been... So, yeah, back to work's great. It's good to be back. It is. I'm feeling
tis the season.
Still.
Tis the season.
Yeah, it is good to be back. I'm enjoying being back at work and... more structure to the day, you know, that kind of thing. More like it was really good, focused on just health for 6 weeks. But it's nice.
Productivity is good. Yeah, using your brain is good.
Is great, and doing more and all that. Yeah,
that's
including
awesome,
including uploading our podcast to YouTube.
Yo,
also
we're back on YouTube.
Didn't drop the podcast for like 4 episodes as well, but it's fine. Yeah. I put them up today, so we're good.
I literally just got a text message during this chat from a good friend who just sent me the screenshot of the notification going, woohoo, it's back on.
I sent her
a picture in return of this one happening live.
Nice.
As commitment. Just so you know, I get consistent messages of, hey, what's going on? What's going on?
Since I released the drop that says, I didn't get any messages, I got messages from people saying, oh yeah, I just thought you'd stop doing it. I didn't want to harass you.
Like, no, harass. I need that.
We do it every week. It's just, we've only got one producer. So,
we may or may... What an excuse. We do it every week. We may or may not just let you know about it. That's basically the story.
Yeah. If there's anything that I have to do work, if something happens where the internet cuts out and I have to kind of cut 2 episodes together because we dialed out, dialed back in.
Gone.
Or if there's something where we say, let's add something in or we'll do a link or something, that episode's not going to ship for 2 or 3 weeks.
Too hard.
So
too
let's
hard.
Just, after it's this, done. I'll ship this immediately. Let's not curse in it or say anything that, you know, that we feel bad about, and I'll just ship it immediately afterwards.
I'm absolutely going to keep a clean, non-potty mouth situation.
So I uploaded to YouTube. I've got a YouTube channel where I talk about EDC and
completely
like
relevant things to this channel. Yeah.
Well, it is technology related.
It's adjacent.
I talk about some
adjacent.
It's adjacent. It's adjacent.
At best.
So I put they have a new podcast tab, and I was like, we've uploaded to YouTube before. We had no success. We got like 30 listens, 30 watches on YouTube, and it was never for any time, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So we stopped doing YouTube and we stuck with Anchor, Spotify, and that's growing, and everything's going well in terms of video podcasts on those platforms. I was like, I wonder now that YouTube has a podcast tab, should I stick it in? I've got 11,000 subs on my channel. Might we get more views? I did stick it in. We got more views. We've got a couple of hundred views now, I think. But my subs are dropping.
But like, are they tanking, or is it literally ones and twos?
It's ones and twos. It's ones and twos on that video, and it's not on any other video. I would say, given there's only 200 people watched it, and I've had, you know, 10 or more people unsubscribe, there's a reasonable percentage of people who are not up for the podcast. So
right. Of the people that watched it, you've got 20% or 5% that are gone. That's probably not a good drop-off ratio.
Yeah.
Although the people that stayed and kept on going, I bet you are more loyal. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if you're... look, it's your channel, it's your people, it's your subs. All I'm saying is, I bet you the people who stuck with it are now
the
advocates.
Other thing is revenue division. I don't know how we'll separate revenue with all the money we make from ad content from this podcast on my channel. So we should probably keep it all separate.
I'm going to have to lawyer up, I think, is
this is the first year I have to claim YouTube on my taxes in terms of revenue.
What a hassle.
It is. Well, we have a tax guy anyway. We already pay for that. So
you just
throw
stuff over this way.
I did. I just was like, this is my problem. This is what I did. 2022 generated revenue from, because we're doing 2022 now, revenue from YouTube. Yeah. Thanks, YouTube.
Last time we chatted, we were talking about audio AI for syncing and creating essentially bots of our speech, like clones.
I remember.
Since then, Spotify have launched a product that translates your voice and the video for a podcast, so you and I could be presenting in French, Portuguese, Hindi.
Oh yeah!
Just with a click of a button, and it would look like we're speaking.
I bet it costs a fortune, though. Things promise the world. I signed up to Otter AI today to do this transcripting for us. It wasn't very good.
This is Spotify. It's Lex Friedman announced it on his podcast and showed his thing. Admittedly, I haven't gone through the story, but just in terms of pace of things, as a good underline, last time we were like, hey, the audio AI stuff's coming along nicely. They're cloning our vocoders, and we're able to do Spotify. Just you're welcome. His all language barriers gone, obliterated with one feature launch. You know,
maybe AI will save San Francisco. Who knows? Maybe if Etsy doesn't work out, maybe there's something to it.
Have you been tracking? Have you been tracking the latest AI shenanigans?
I've been reading the headlines. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, mate. Well, there's a couple of pieces. There's all the big tech dropping their AI stuff all at once. Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, Google's. We talk through that. Apple distinctly left out with their I don't know how to describe that phone. It definitely is not a Porsche iteration, as Marcus Brownlee discussed. I'd like to talk about the iPhone 15 and just understand what's going on. So there's the big guys doing the AI thing and just like one at a time knocking out any AI vertical. Yeah. Then there's the kind of underlying movements that still happen. The ChatGPT 4 with video multi inputs and just crushing. DALL-E 3 taking on the journey for video.
I haven't been able to get that to work. Yeah, we can talk about that, but yeah.
Awesome stuff. But the one that I'm enjoying the most right now is a bit retro and it's nice and pushing the edge. It's the AI hardware stuff where you've got Tab, which is essentially a pendant that records your audio at all times and transcripts, understands that and makes that part of your model so you can query it and ask it questions in general as an AI agent about your history. Wow. You could ask anything from, hey, that argument I was having yesterday with Marcus, can you summarize it for me? To remember 3 weeks ago when I was chatting with my wife and she said she really wanted that particular...
I'm all in for this.
Any
I'm
of that stuff.
In. I'm
so,
all in.
So speaking of AI, like San Francisco, so in a hacker house, basically what happened, there was another company called Rewind.ai and they've been effectively doing this, but everything on digital. So what they were doing is it's a Mac Pro client. And it's a darling. It got huge funding. And it basically does all of that across your email, your client, everything that you use on your laptop. So you can easily, it's not just search. It's like interrogate intelligently your entire digital history.
Yeah.
This startup got wind that Rewind.ai was about to do a hardware version to do this kind of real life version of it. And so accelerated and did a hacker house and did some like very guerrilla type stuff. And Ari, very like prominent kind of, you know, hacker in the scene. He did the thing with... When the Ukrainian refugees needed a place and he hacked together a kind of website to make it happen and so on. He gets on and they just put together this prototype and they rush to do the video and the demo and they go pre-order $600 a pop. There's only 100 of them going. Rewind.ai comes back the next day and goes, we have ours available. We don't know how many. We don't know when it's going to be available, but here it is. And it's called Rewind Pendant. So the fight on. And then a whole breakout now of everyone else doing hardware that has... essentially recorders, people using the watch to record so you can do kind of interrogate your history, the whole story, people using your phone to do the same. And then Humane come back on the scene, who you recall Humane are those guys, the ex-Apple designers who had this thing on TED that was going to be like
a couple of weeks ago.
It's going to be this little transponder that you can talk to and it has a little, all of a sudden there's the actual visual of the Humane pin, which we'd never seen in a Paris fashion show, which loops back nicely to the Ray-Ban sunglasses that we're going to chat about because we're going to get them.
We're definitely getting them. We're
and all of a sudden, everyone's like, wait, that's what Humane is doing because they had to rush this thing and they're essentially going to be doing recording. And then back from whatever design grave, UX grave there is, Johnny Ive comes back and goes, I'm consulting with Sam Altman to design an AI phone, which everyone basically says, it therefore must be a pendant recorder. Everyone's, so AI hardware is back front and center in a very rapid, fun little transgression. I'm enjoying the thread.
I got this Plaid, it's called the Plaid Note. They sent it to me. I got this like 6 weeks ago and I'm allowed to talk about it now.
This is not your YouTube channel, mate. This is not
I know, but it's the same deal. Pardon?
I'm just saying, this is not your YouTube. I'm just joking. Tell me about it. Tell me, is it essentially permanent? You sit there, permanently record and go for it?
It's credit card size. So it's a tiny little, it's credit card size. It's magnetized, sticks on the back of your phone, records permanently everything you say, it hears everything. You know, pendant sounds better because it's on your chest. But this is Plaid and it's been out. I mean, it's Kickstarter, but it's their whole thing is automatic translation and querying, which is, it's just so cool. I love that one of them will win. Plaid, this is pretty cool, but one of them will win. I love that we're there, you know?
I mean, it's essentially just, it's a recorder plus all the ChatGPT kind of slapped on top. And just, it's the querying, it's not just search, it's intelligent, like...
Yeah.
Who's writing that argument?
Yeah.
Tell me. And the demos are genuinely mind-blowing. And obviously, it's pushing all of the privacy, all of the craziness. Like, this is Redux back 2015 when Google had Clips or whatever it was, the video recorder that was permanently recording everything, because you always miss out on those moments. And so AI would intelligently be able to go back and go, oh, that's when your dog caught the thing and that's when your kids walked. And, Google is so... Google Glass is 20 years ahead of Ray-Ban glasses, all that stuff. But it's time, isn't it? Everyone's kind of, we're feeling like it's more accessible. It's more that the utility is so much greater that you could see the downsides being not, overcome,
Yeah, and society's come a long way. Like the problems we had with glass, even having cameras. I remember it being like when cameras came on phones first, people were like, what about the gym? You could be naked and someone take a photo. Yeah, yeah. Now
there's
people
laws
use their
in Australia
phones.
At the beach.
Now people, YouTube channels are entirely them in the changing rooms at the gym, flexing in front of the mirrors and stuff. So it's just the next step, and everything will be recorded. Everyone has to be on their best behavior all the time. In our 20s, you and I got to do stupid things, and photos were taken, but it wasn't a digital time, so it was fine. Those photos are in someone's drawer somewhere. They're not on the internet for everyone to find. So, it's the gradual progression towards everything being digitized. So I think
you're saying it's inevitable. I tend to agree. Although I feel like photos from my 20s are still findable because there's some collage made up when we were cross-dressing, and there are photos of those that got taken on the feet. Anyway, long story. I love this thread. I love this, and I like battles. I like open warfare battles where, when Spotify released their piece, six, seven different startups said, I pitched Lex on this, I showed him my demo months ago. Why didn't he take this up? You've crushed my startups, because it's essentially the same models. They're all just rappers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you get, have you seen Epic, this one that's trending at the moment?
No.
Epic, Eric, I'll have a look. One use only. They're making 250K a day. It's gone viral, and it's essentially a way to turn yourself into a 90s yearbook. So it's like a photo, with the classic blue style 90s. It's just coloration. It's just AI with that one use case, photos of yourself, and then you get a 90s yearbook of your friends and you and whatever it is, wearing a cheerleader outfit, whatever. And it's just one use case, and they make it 250 grand a day, and it's
gone. Holy smokes. Yeah, it just takes one thing to go viral, right? And then you've won.
That's it.
You want to talk about Meta's with their new glasses, with their partnership with...
Meta laid down an absolute smack. Just before, Meta just came back and went, oh, by the way, here's VR. Oh, and by the way, here's... To our 1 billion daily active users, here is AI-generated stickers. Just YOLO, have them. And we reached a moment where it happened, by the way, where my mum now is telling me about features that exist before I knew they existed.
She's like, did she tell you about that? Was she the one
who downloaded iOS? So I knew it was in Messenger. I saw that it happened, but I had no idea it was in WhatsApp. And I just kind of figured it wasn't. And I got mum going, if you download iOS 17 and you go to WhatsApp and you go to the sticker icon, you'll be able to, and you enter a prompt. It's called a prompt. It's, you tell it whatever you want. Here are some examples that I've done. I'm like, okay, we have arrived. Anyway, they do that. And then... they go, like ballistic on the 3D avatar thing, which we can get to as a separate, like the immersion is real. And then they go for version two of these Ray-Ban sunglasses. With version one last year, bit of a flop. They're all over kind of LensCraft and optics, optometry shops around the place. But this one is different, right? I kind of feel into it.
Yeah, they're smaller. They're much more manageable. It doesn't look ridiculous for a start. I think that's step one, right? All of these ones, like when... What's that app? Snap. When Snap did their glasses as well, like they look too funky. They were kind of too quirky, you know, this kind of thing. Yeah. These are Ray-Bans. I like Ray-Bans. I wear glasses all the time. Why not have cameras on them? Sounds great. And I feel like it's the right time.
Well, they had two things. So I think the form factor, so the bridge is slightly smaller. So they had the Ray-Bans version one. They were called Series or Stories. Stories. They were called Ray-Ban Stories, Meta from last year.
And they could do 20-second clips or something. It would go straight to Facebook and all that stuff.
Lower resolution and mostly just a camera. And then this one, they've just called them Ray-Ban Meta. They put their brand on them and they're upgraded. They're the same Ray-Bans, different colors. So they are Ray-Bans. Smaller bridge, so the electronics are finer. But two things, I think, the big selling pieces. One is... Well, three things. One is the video is legit what you want to do. So it's 48 megapixel or 12 megapixel. It's the quality of videos that you would put up on social anyway. It's what they can get compressed to. Two is the audio as you're listening to stuff is legit. It's not leaking. It's not nasty. It's not whatever. But the big one that I got excited about is and they pitched it as a coming soon for what it's worth, is Hey Meta. So they've got their own digital assistant, which they're popping in. They used to have Hey Portal, which is terrible. Yeah. Hey Meta, take a photo. But also, Hey Meta, what am I looking at? How much does it cost on Amazon? Uh-huh. Hey Meta. So contextualizing what you're looking at and being able to interrogate using AI agents, whatever you're looking at or maybe listening to, was a real flip. All of a sudden, you're not having to pull out your phone and ask it kind of questions or take a photo kind of Google Lens style. You're one huge piece of friction taken away if it's permanently looking and processing. I thought that was a thing.
And I also think yes, that is a thing. Of course, that's how it scales in terms of value. But even if they just got the camera right, that it was not invasive, like as a dad, like we talk about this a lot, the reason you buy the latest iPhone is because it's got the best cameras. Yeah. But if you can be at the birthday party and take the video and be looking with your own eyes at the kid. Like this was one of our criticisms of the Vision Pro when in the ad that they did when they released the Vision Pro. It's like, you can do 3D video and he's watching his kids hugging and they're playing with a flipping headset on. He's not even looking at them with his own eyes.
It was always ridiculous.
Yeah. So like, I you know, the more you can abstract away, the fact that you have to look at your whole life through your phone. I think if you can look at it for real and still capture that stuff, magic.
Like, that's a really good
point. The camera is legitimately good enough that it's maybe not as good as your iPhone, but comparable. Good enough that you can capture the moment without your phone. Job done.
It's a really good point. And
especially if you wear glasses already, it's no brainer.
The neat thing they did, it made me go, I could see how I'd stream now. Not public streaming, but maybe to like friends or like family as I'm doing something. It's Instagram. It recognizes the glasses as an input source. Yeah. And from the glasses, you can just tap and go live stream.
Yeah.
And same quality kind of continuous. And I could really see, I don't know, you're doing something moving and you want to share it while it's happening and you tap. So maybe it's not a stream. Maybe it's a video call or a closed group video call or something. I could really...
Is it just to Facebook?
It's just to Instagram. Instagram and FB at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like
they can open it up.
Yeah. I do wish it was saved, that there was an in-between step. But anyway.
Well, you can record video. You can record video and photos, no problem. But it was just this specifically the live stream kind of model.
Okay, live stream goes direct. Yeah, that makes sense.
For $199, I'm in.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, let's do it. We'll do that, and then we'll do the Vision Pros, and that'll be...
The Quest 3 they also dropped.
Quest 3 is great. Yeah, I don't. I did you see the Lex Fridman Elon Musk video?
The 3D one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Did we? Did
that sent you that? Like the full immersive avatars. Yeah, we haven't talked about it. We just hinted at it. The full recreation avatars. Yeah, stuff that everyone's going towards.
There's a video, and I think this is the one that's going to be the tipping point for people. So, the metaverse till now has been branded as these like idiot looking, you know, Wii Fit avatars with like no legs and just basically, you know, triangles with spherical heads wandering around and being inappropriate to each other. What dropped last week or 2 weeks ago, probably at this stage, was Lex Fridman, who had previously, before the call, had a full body scan, as had Mark Zuckerberg, using 3D scanners and technology to, and not just a scan where he stood still, but where he made a series of different, they record him saying different things and made lots of different facial expressions, and they made a 3D model of him. Now, what's really interesting about this is they don't have to use the cameras. When you put on a headset, I know you know all this, Rami, I'm just saying it just to bring people along. Yeah. When you put the headset on, it's got front-facing and rear-facing cameras. They don't have to film. If I put it on now and I was having a podcast with Rami, it doesn't have to record me in my entirety and then stream all of the data of a 3D model, which is a lot of data, at the same time. What it does is it relies on the model and it just tracks deltas. It tracks little signifiers like corners of eyes, corners of mouth, and knows from depending on where they are based on the model that you've scanned in where you are. The result is ultra realistic, as in like eerie, uncanny
valley crossing.
Yeah, realistic. This podcast episode with Lex Fridman, a podcaster, and Mark Zuckerberg, where at one stage Lex is like, and he's an interesting guy as it is. He's an engineer slash on the spectrum. And he like talks in a kind of a, one of the things that helps it is they're both quite robotic people, but they have this conversation and it is indistinguishable from real as far as I can see in the video. And I sent it onto my WhatsApp group, and a couple of the biggest skeptics about the metaverse came back to me and said, okay, maybe I can see there being something to this now. And it's starting to get real for me. So
because you're now teleporting, you're now in the presence of you're moving to another. So this was the same tech Mark personally got so wounded that he had that video of him, the photo of him, the classic photo of him with the metaverse in front of the Paris Eiffel, the Eiffel Tower in this like ECG. He was so personally wounded that last year he got them to put legs in and to fake a legs thing, and then went to the labs and did the labs demo of this 3D avatar recreation, like all offline. And a year later, he's gone and done this thing. But Vision Pro also demonstrated this. You gave a sneak preview where you scan your face, and then as you're talking, it's able to recreate the avatar. It maybe not quite the same realism. We don't know. Uh-huh. Let's have a look. And also, Google had been doing that with Project Starlight. That thing where it was a box and a sit-down and it was kind of projection. Turns out that's essentially the same thing. What it was doing wasn't actually broadcasting a hologram or the actual video. It was a model recreation with the camera scanning. So people have been coming at it from a few different angles, but it does feel like...
And Mark did say last year when the Vision Pro came out, do you remember he famously said, "Oh, it turns out we were on the right track. They don't have anything different to us." And I was like, "Well, theirs is way better." Yeah, it's not though. They are. It's the same technology they're centering.
Well, let's see which gets commercialized, right? Quest 3 is not going to be doing the scanning, but the Vision Pro might be. But the quality might not be.
I wonder.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Those scanners are expensive. I work in this space. Creating those models.
Exactly.
The hardest part is creating the models.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So the question is how do you have to pay $500 for a Quest 3. It looks great. It's worth it.
You made me buy the Quest 2. I don't know. I
haven't touched it in months.
Quest through months, years. I haven't touched it since early 2021.
Still. Pancake optics. All the seed path through stuff's looking great. Everyone's going to build on that. All the games are going to be on that. No one's building games for Vision Pro for a while. Just saying. I'm going to plant the seed.
But if you buy that, you're not going to buy the Vision Pro,
are
you?
Of course you are. Well, it's completely different platform.
We're not doing both.
One's spatial computing, one's gaming. It's a completely different story. which is a nice segue into the Apple 15 iPhone 15 Pro, or whatever it is. The titanium mess of a thing that...
Yeah.
You're not upgrading. We're both on i14.
No, 14s. We're definitely not upgrading. You and I had agreed we're not upgrading.
We've made a solemn pact that we're not upgrading. I don't care if we've got 5x telephoto zoom and our kids will hate us in the future for not having the best camera.
3D video, we're not doing it. Yeah.
No one's got 3D video yet until we get the Vision Pro, and then we'll have to buy the phone. And you'll have to also upgrade to the AirPods, apparently. What is going on? That is a shocker. I think what got me is that Marcus Brownlee anchored me in this Apple's a Porsche. They basically have the same formula, the same design, and they iterate year on year and improves and improves and improves and improves. That would be true if Porsche was to suddenly release a version that got way too hot, that broke down, that scuffed,
that
and was
fire.
Fundamentally worse than the previous version. That would be the right model. what happened? I was messaging you. I was telling Siri to message you furiously as I walked into my first hands-on, the first day they were available. I walked into the shop. I picked it up, and I'm like, it's 10:05. It had just been opened. I picked up the unit, the demo unit, and there were scratches on the back of the demo unit where they had to put it on the magnets. Ooh. I'm like, what's going on here? And then I pick up the titanium. The titanium's got scuffs and fingerprints all over it. I go to that case, the fine woven situation. I mean, what is that? And it's just scratched. The demo units on the morning of
patinaed, Rami. But that's what you call that, mate. When it's classy. You say patinaed.
What a shock.
Disaster. Breaks super easy. Actually, hardly any titanium in it anyway. It looks like you saw Jerry Riggs anything. There's about $30 worth of titanium in it.
Just for
the rim. Call it medical grade 5, which if it had the weight of metal in it, in that would cost about $3,000 in titanium alone.
Right.
So he's like, I wonder how much titanium's in it. He broke the thing apart, melted it all down, and deduced there's about $30 of titanium. It's a thin
1 millimeter.
Thin, uber thin slice of titanium soldered onto some aluminum is what it is.
Yeah, and badly soldered onto aluminum. Yeah. And you end up with, okay, so it's lightness. They've gone for the lightness situation where they've changed the angular momentum, so the weight's still in the middle and they've removed it from the outside, so it feels lighter and doesn't flip out of your hand as much. All for it. It feels cheaper and it breaks easier and it scratches and the glass on the lens, it's a disaster.
It's a disaster.
Right?
Yeah, they've had disastrous releases, though.
They have.
They have. Like, I mean, the iPhone 4 when they first had the antenna on the outside. I know, but I mean...
11
like,
years ago.
I know, but then the iPhone 6 Plus had Bendgate. That's when you first got those people bending those phones
gate,
with their
and
thumbs.
Bendgate was great. Yeah, 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 that's true.
And then,
that's true.
Like, these are things, you know.
But it's been a while since they muffed it up.
This is bad.
I get it. At each re-architecture, you're going to have, like, a burn-in phase, but this didn't even feel like a re-architecture, though.
This was... And the funny thing, Jerry Riggs Anything, the guy who was taking the phone apart, he's got it. You should watch... He's actually trending on YouTube right now. He's got 3 videos on the iPhone 15 Pro. But one of them, he is like, it's a great line. He says, now to test the titanium. He does the blue, you know, the way it's got that blue finish. It took 15 hours using whatever process they use to put this on. And he just scrapes it ever so gently with the back of a knife. And took me 1.5 seconds to take it off. Like, but it comes off so easy.
Yeah,
it's like, as in, like, you scratch
it's like
with your nails,
off.
Your fingernails, like,
It was meant to be, like, fused. The titanium color was actually changed, and turns out it's, like, the lightest coating, and it's kind of...
Yeah.
It's a shocker. It's a rush of a situation.
The way
to
go,
for a 5X zoom.
Yeah. No, I'm not doing it. Yeah, no, we're not doing it. And it heats up. There's massive overheating issues. Like, iOS 17 has got major problems, too.
So they're releasing software patches on software patches to stop
the
story.
I've got the third software update to 7, whatever that one came out today. They've been doing it like crazy.
Tut, Apple. Tut, tut. I like the Pixel 8, which can change any photo into a smiley photo.
Oh, nice. So if you're not smiling...
Did you watch the Google story? Oh, no. You have to watch the Google drop. Google has basically blended phones and Google Photos AI into one thing. They're not separating the software. Basically, like, all camera tech is no longer hardware. Like, you've peaked at hardware. How many more megapixels can you slap in there? Maybe you can make telephoto, but, like, pancake optics can have their limits. Software is a differentiating factor. And Google is, like, triumphant at doing this to the point
Let's just make everyone smile in the photos.
It's brilliant. It's called Best Take, or I don't know what it's called, but basically you can grab and it'll grab the faces, and then you can choose which face of that person do you want from the various photos you've done, or just make them smile even if you don't have
brilliant.
The version of it. So you know the ones, the family photos where you've got two kids and you've taken 100 and you don't have one where both
of
them are smiling and looking the same
way. That's brilliant. Best Take. I want it. I really want the Pixel Fold. Like, that is the best hardware out there right now.
It's the best hardware. Well, have a look at the 8. I think the 8 is actually now, like, next level. They've got the Tensor 2 chip in there. It's doing great. They're coming.
No, I'm up for it. There's just ecosystem stuff, like with photos, sharing photos with family and all that stuff. But
Yeah, exactly.
Some really
you can't we're locked in, damn you.
Here's one for you. I don't know where the time is on this thing. Okay,
we've got a 4-hour talk to your drop. This is how this works.
What is a major industry disruptor that we haven't talked about and you won't think of it either? I'll give you some clues. It's health related.
Major industry health related disruptor.
It's not software. It was an interesting framing when I thought about it today.
If you're talking about the super focus ultrasound, I am all in and I'm deep.
I'm not talking about that. We can talk about that next. I'm talking about Ozempic. Do you know Ozempic? The diet drug?
Yeah. The weight loss drug of choice.
Weight loss drug of choice. Context here. So it was a drug that was developed for type 2 diabetes, right? Yeah. That they were like, great, it actually cures your type 2. That's great. People on it started losing weight. And they were like, oh, great, that's interesting. So they started giving, they created a separate drug called Ozempic. The other one's called something, Waymec or something. I can't remember what it's called. So Ozempic, it's famous because like all the celebs are using it. And they, what have I got here? 9 million prescriptions in Q4 of 2022. 9 million, so in a quarter. So that's how many people are being prescribed this just to lose weight. Yep. But apparently, so many people are losing weight on Ozempic that it's having an impact on airlines, the snacks industry, diet industry.
Oh, that's amazing.
So it goes back to what you were saying about the health kick, about like there seems to be, you know, I discovered this little known book, Outlive, this like back alley.
No one had heard about it.
No one had heard about
little
it.
Little nugget.
I discovered it and yeah. You're welcome. And you were saying it feels like there's a tipping point coming, or that there's something bigger happening.
Yeah.
I think it's Ozempic. I think the bigger thing is that people are injecting themselves in their abdomen and they're losing 10 pounds on average. This thing I read said that United Airlines, if the average weight of their passengers went down 10 pounds, they would increase profits by $80 million in a year, in this coming year alone.
That's amazing. So airlines who are traditionally bankrupt, who are traditionally repeatedly bankrupt on the absolute thinnest of margins. You're telling me Ozempic is about to make airlines. Yep. Every MBA case study is about to go out the window thanks to Ozempic.
The diet industry is a $76 billion industry, apparently, that thrives on keto / low carb / whatever.
Gone.
It's fine, Ozempic.
is Ozempic the one made by Novodisc, or what, the Nordic company?
Yeah, that's right.
Who are now valued at more than everything. the next like 20 or something European public company. Its value is up there with like it's with the big techs at this point in time.
It's not without side effects, obviously. Yeah. So what it does, it slows down your metabolism, so it makes you feel kind of nauseous all the time, and you know, I don't know, it wouldn't be for me.
But there's a couple of versions, right? Because I feel like Novartis had a version, or someone. Johnson & Johnson.
There have been a few people whose stomachs have just stopped working because they slowed them down so much. They're just like, I broke myself. Now I can't eat anything ever. But anyway, was not expecting Ozempic to have such a massive potential, given the scale of it. That's 9 million prescriptions a quarter.
I love
of this. People who have type 2 diabetes, unfortunately, can't get medication because the amount of people dieting using Ozempic. Like, that's the other problem, you know. But
Detail. I love that idea of externalities and like positive externalities, but for some, there's always someone who cops it, who's on the other side of that bet, right?
Yeah.
Someone else who's set their entire ecosystem around fat people, like, you know, average weight being at a particular BMI of above 25.
Yeah, I read average weight for men average rate for a man in the 1940s was 160 pounds, and it went up pretty linearly until 1990, and then in 1990 it went on average from 190 pounds to 210 pounds or 215 pounds.
Explosion. Yeah. And we still don't know why. We don't know if it's
Better nutrition. I mean, it's the trifecta of an exploding population that needs feeding, and the criteria you need calorie rich food that doesn't go off, readily available and easy to ship to those locations.
So the processing itself has made it much, much worse. It, like all of those things, the preservatives, the way flour was processed, like all of those details.
But fructose, just the sheer dose of you know. But like,
I still like all those people who go, I went to Europe for 2 weeks and I lost weight, ate the same thing, ate more bread and I lost weight than I did to the UK.
They smoked cigarettes probably and drank a lot of caffeine too. I went to
40,000 steps a day because there's no carbs.
Smoked 40 Marlboro Reds and drank some espressos. But
it's incredible. I shoved Ozempics every morning out of the hotel. They were giving them away for free. So there's a couple of segues here because we've been going into two things. One is that blue zone graph.
Yeah, I mean,
just the, like that
Tell
blew
us
my
about
mind.
It. I'm so sad.
So yeah. It's not confirmed, but there's some interesting. It was an economist, right? So there's some interesting insight here. So the Blue Zone thing, we've been chatting about it because it's a bit of a hype. It's become the Blue Zone diet. There's a Netflix documentary. These are the zones. I think Sardinia was the first one where they discovered that they get a higher proportion of people living up to 100, known as the Blue Zone kind of areas. And there's a bunch of them in Japan and in California and Australia and other places tend to be kind of equatorial. But anyway. Off that comes a diet, understanding their lifestyles. It's all about activity. And there's a kind of a deep dive into what makes Blue Zones work. Let's codify that and send that out to everyone else. Fantastic. Then along comes this graph from The Economist that goes, hey, funny thing. If you look at when birth certificates had to become regulated and were introduced into those Blue Zones, their life expectancy doesn't seem to be that radical at all. It actually falls right back to the average.
Oh, yeah. So what we're finding out is that if you introduce birth, that is a causal.
That
is what I'm taking
creates
from this.
Death. That long that birth
people
certificates.
Don't live as long if you track.
If you're
like,
tracking them.
It's yeah. like that thing, you know, the photons of light going through the two
Heisenberg.
Things that Heisenberg.
It's Heisenberg, yeah, yeah.
If you watch someone's life,
they die.
Don't laugh as long.
They die all the time. That's what they say.
Jesus.
I don't know. I don't
birth
know how
certificates
complete.
Are a terrible thing, aren't they?
It did make me think of my granddad who always lied about his age and no one ever knew when he was born. And we're like, roughly. Did you die at 101 or 105?
Didn't
or
you
actually
say last
95?
Week that he was 103 or something when he
That's
died?
That is what our official, but there's a bell curve around the stories and the folklore around when he was actually born. He fudged it because he wanted to get into uni earlier, but then did you actually fudge it?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah, which was the real date and which was the fake date, and then he forgot, and then
lots
yeah,
of
who
great,
knows?
Lots yeah. of great. Anyway, I thought that was amazing. The other one that's been I went onto a deep dive in is the replication crisis. Essentially, the science replication crisis
yeah,
in science
replication
in
of
general.
Data science, yeah, selective
right.
data, yeah.
And,
yeah.
and replication of studies, particularly in behavioral science, particularly in behavioral economics. And so Dan Ariely, who is this kind of relatively famous, I would say, kind of behavioral economist who... He was kind of a bit of a lone wolf and he went off his own... A lot of things that were kind of somewhat controversial, but it's all coming out that a good chunk of the data was fraudulent. And this was in The New Yorker and it was an amazing article. And yeah. it's pushing a lot of the things that we... So nudge was a big one, like a classic yeah. one of these behavioral economic things where if you put at the top of an insurance form a declaration of someone saying, I will be honest, as opposed to at the bottom, then you get this, you know, 30% boost in, you know, really compliant, honest. Yeah. Do the same again with drive certificates. Do the same again with anything where you can micro behavioral changes in the way information is presented and so on that will nudge positive behavior because that's all humans take. Amongst other things were the Amy Kudo, the thing where you put your arms out and you the power pose where all of a sudden you feel much better. There were all these behavioral science economics kind of arguments and studies that were proving these things unequivocally, and there's this huge movement. And it turns out a lot of it's BS. It turns yeah. out that a lot of the data can't be replicated. The original data was fraudulent. The statistical analysis were a bit dodge. And it's deep. You know, people have lost chairs and out of Harvard. Dan himself's kind of surviving but going along.
Malcolm Gladwell is one of the names that leverages it.
Everyone's getting hit. Everyone's getting hit with this. All the pop, essentially the pop behavioral sciences that we've been reading for the last little while and these little nuggets of things, essentially like in the hacking, self-improvement kind of, what's the cheapest way we can change our own behavior or someone else's behavior if we're a CEO wanting to,
yeah.
you know, create better, whatever. And it's all kind of falling apart in front of our eyes. It's
we'll
an amazing
put, we'll read. Put the New Yorker article because you sent it to me and I thought it was a great read. Here's the tweet. Like, so priming, so subtle cues influencing behavior without awareness, ego depletion, social priming, power posing, grit, so passion and prevalence as key predictors of success, growth mindset, facial feedback hypothesis, stereotype threat. There's like a bunch of these like... These terms that are broadly used in these kind of businessy self-helpy books, largely.
These phenomena that have been, have become not folklore,
like
become axioms of this is what's possible.
Defunct.
Yeah. That's all become under.
I think the question, though, is but if it was intentional or not, I think is the question of is it just negligence with the data or is it was intentional?
There's clearly stuff that's been proved that was very intentional. Like that aside, kind of aside from the maleficence of, I mean, the irony here is that Dan and I think Gina was an Italian scientist in Harvard. She was a behavioral economist. Their whole thing was studying and kind of understanding lying and understanding people who don't tell the truth and people who cheat.
Oh, we lost you.
And like the story
we lost you real quick. Their whole thing was
understanding lying and cheating.
Yeah.
The central part of it was how to cheat and what makes people cheat and why do people cheat sometimes and not others, and therefore how do we nudge them to do the right thing? All the while, it turns out, and in some cases, cheating. It were clearly fabrication of data. Yeah, dude. Really, really fascinating stuff. Fascinating
dude.
Stuff.
Dude.
Yeah.
We better leave it there if we're going to keep it under the hour for people. Do you think we didn't get to today?
Yeah, lots we didn't get to.
SBF trial started today. We're going to keep that for next week because we'll have some more news on it. But the circus continues.
Has the Michael Lewis thing come out yet?
It drops at the end of October, so it hasn't come out yet. So the nice thing is we get a couple of weeks of early trial, then we get the Michael Lewis book, and then we're all in. This is the next Johnny Depp trial. This is we're all in on this one.
This can't be better timed, can it? It cannot be better timed.